And here we are on YouTube for another edition of Off the Hook Overtime. It's Manuel over here, Kyle over there.
Hi.
Out in Signal Land, I'm still saying it. We have Rob T. Firefly and Gila and Alex, who apparently can't hear me.
We hear you. Oh, I hear you.
We're not reacting in any way.
I hear you.
Okay. Well, they're not reacting, and they still haven't said a word.
I don't know.
They Gila, to be you're there.
Catatonic over there.
What's going on?
Hello.
Oh, finally. Okay.
Hi.
Are you delayed or something? What's going on?
I guess so.
That would indicate they're delayed.
Something might
quite
be
quiet a bit.
Well, it appears to
Yeah, we're here.
We're here.
Wait a minute. That took you 20 seconds to answer me. There's something wrong.
We are here. We were on YouTube.
Okay. Oh, this is going to be fun.
No.
This will be fun.
Okay, Rob, you're not aware of the massive delay that you guys are both have when you're answering.
Ah, just fixed it. Sorry about that.
Okay, I want an answer. I want to know what caused that. That's kind of cool.
What caused that is very stupid, and so I will happily admit it. I had accidentally muted the Signal conversation and unmuted the YouTube.
Oh, so you were talking to me on YouTube.
I was talking to you and delayed you on the YouTube.
Wow.
And
that makes sense. That
Well, yes.
That set Gila off. Be a half hour. This
Rob, thanks for monitoring, though. Actually, I was meaning to say that. Really appreciate that you were checking that.
I can go out and listen on Alexa, and that'll be another like 20 seconds.
This is a team effort. Okay,
it is. Yes, it really is. We have a lot of fun here. Okay, so we're on YouTube. Everything seems to be working for the most part.
Yes.
Although, you know, I just got this this super obnoxious message, which of course has disappeared now. But basically, it's trying to YouTube is trying to Google again. They're trying to get me to put ads on the channel. Always trying to do that. But this time it says you can now have side by side ads, and I realize, wow, this is the crap I've been seeing lately on YouTube. Where basically, if you hit pause, all of a sudden there's an ad on the side now. Or sometimes the ad just appears. I'm watching the World Series. In the middle of an inning, they have ads now on the side of the. They just figured out they can put ads in half the screen and reduce the full screen to half a screen. It's just happening everywhere. I mean, bad ideas. They spread so quickly. But just seeing this pitched to me by YouTube was horrible.
Why were you watching the World Series on YouTube?
No, I wasn't watching it on YouTube. I was watching that on regular television.
Yeah, they do it over the air as well, but
yeah, turn on Channel 5 now, and you'll see it. It basically, whenever you know there's a few moments before they throw the ball again, they're going to throw an ad on the right hand side of the screen. It's crazy,
right? But I mean, given the fact that there are all the ads in the ballpark and everywhere, how can you tell?
Because it's taking up half your TV screen, and it's also the audio. You know, they basically are inserting an ad in the. They used to have ads between the innings or the half innings, and now they have it inside the innings. You know, this is. Look, I'm not much of a sports person, but I do notice things. I notice that when you watch international soccer, there are no ads. There are no ads anywhere on the screen. There are no ads until the half is finished. You have 45 minutes at least consecutively of commercial-free television and just watching people kick a ball around. All right? So, you know, it might not sound like much, but it represents something. The fact that people get so incensed if ads pollute the soccer screen that it just doesn't happen. That's something that we could use a little exercise on here and you know, do that for our events. However, I mean, our football, American football is made for commercials. There's no saving that. The whole thing is just, you know, one slow move after another. But, you know, baseball, I think there's still hope for. There's still some tradition there. People are constantly complaining about how long baseball takes. Why does nobody complain about how long American football takes? Every game is 3 hours. And all they're doing is just pushing themselves back and forth across the field. There's no variety. It's the same damn thing. Baseball, they went 18 innings the other day. It was a 7-hour game. Yeah, that sounds like torture, but it was actually quite fascinating. All right, that's enough sports.
We did lose a viewer during the sports discussion.
Only one? I figured we'd lose them all.
Oh, no, but we just gained a few. Okay, so greetings to the 45 people who are with us right now. And I do want to assure at ArtieJohn0 that, yes, we are, in fact, are live right now on October 29th.
Just because you say October 29th doesn't mean we didn't do this on October 28th.
No, but someone said, wait, are you live on October 29th? And yes. Also, our friend Lex asks if you just claimed that football was slower than baseball.
Oh,
football is slower than baseball. Yes, it absolutely is. Why? Because you have this massive amount of people heavily decked out in all this protective gear, which they need, by the way, because it's a stupid game where you bang your head into another head. But yeah. Look at the progression. I mean, yeah, somebody throws a ball sometimes and someone catches it and they're far away on the field. Okay, that's great. They're very, very exciting. But it's mostly just moving up and down. And it's like, you know, you can have 5 seconds left and it'll take a half hour because of all the fake plays that are going on to either run out the clock or make the clock stop. It's, you know, here's the thing with baseball, even if there's two outs in the bottom of the ninth inning and you're behind 20 runs, you can still win. It's not likely, but you can still win. Try that in any other game with a clock. Doesn't work.
I think so. I don't know if you saw my face when you said football was a stupid game. No, them's fighting words, Emmanuel. But
American. Well, you're from the Midwest. I know.
But, yes. But the other thing I was going to say is the thing about football versus baseball and American football is how many sports are there when like there's one person moving at a time? Maybe. Well, in football, everybody's moving, and in basketball, everybody's moving, and in baseball, you just kind of stand there.
In baseball, it's one man against another man. It's a
battle. The other 11 people are just standing.
Well, no, they're watching them and they're calculating what is going to happen next. I mean, you know, people think chess is boring, and it can be, especially if you're not playing it, but it's also a fascinating strategy to watch. And I don't know. I think there's 50,000 people in a ballpark in Los Angeles right now who would disagree with you. And that's probably it. I know.
But, no, I'm not saying that baseball is not it. I'm not saying baseball is a bad game. It's not golf or car racing. Are you going to try to explain that like golf is really all about physics?
I'm not going to defend golf. I don't understand golf.
Chicken.
Yeah, I don't. You know, it's all this space you have to. How do you spectate golf? I don't get that. Do you chase after the people? You know, it's just is there a stadium or something? It doesn't work for me. But baseball, it's got this tradition, goes back to the 1850s, and it's fascinating to me. It really is, and. I don't know. Sometimes it can be boring. I know that. But the thing is, they're ruining it by doing things like having a pitch clock, you know, where you have to quickly pitch or, you know, you get a ball against you or, you know, an extra innings putting somebody on second so that somebody is in scoring position all the time. Why are they trying to hurry this game up? But every football game, 3 hours minimum, you know, it preempts The Simpsons a lot of times, you know, pisses me off.
It does frustrate me when college football on Saturday night runs over and Saturday Night Live is delayed.
Uh-huh.
That's a bummer. But I don't know. I enjoy football.
It can be fun. It can be, you know, an enjoyable event. I like tailgating. I like, you know, the pregame things, you know. I like the event more than I like. And the Super Bowl is fun, you know, all the commercials and things like that. That's always cool.
Are you like looking
bad? Bad Bunny is coming this January, February, whenever it is. It gets later every year. But yeah, so there's that. And but the thing is, you know, I was trying to find out about the National League playoffs or the American League playoffs and the World Series, and it was hard to get scores. Instead, we're getting scores for the Jets game. You know, it's the beginning of the season, and they have a perfect record, 0-7. Nobody cares. But somehow that's more important than the World Series. Last night, I was trying to listen to the World Series on the radio. You know, we have in New York City, we have three all sports channels on the radio. We have 660, we have 880, rest in peace, WCBS, and we have 1050. Two of them are ESPN channels. Not one of them had the World Series. They're all talking about sports, but not one of them could be bothered to have the World Damn Series.
I think it's the nature of the different ways people are consuming this stuff. So the video on demand features, the ability to watch on your mobile device or something like that. It's just, it's making them, it's fragmenting and making, as a result of people's tastes and how they choose to watch, it's kind of deprioritizing the way it had been a spectacle in the past when you didn't have those kinds of avenues.
Well, I was trying to listen. I was driving in my car. Exactly, I wanted to listen to the radio.
They're not making
I wanted
it.
To listen to the old AM radio. I figured there's three damn sports channels in New York City, and one of them must have the World Series, but I was wrong.
Right. It's just and two not of them, being prioritized as the event that it was in the past.
One of the stations had a basketball game. Okay, fine. You know, whatever. But the two other ones were just talking about sports. So, you know, why are there so many sports channels if they can't even have sports on them?
And hearing the World Series on AM, I mean, that's...
That's special.
That's...
That is really special. Listening to it...
That's a spectacle. That's an event. And they mm-hmm. should really, like, yeah...
And if you can't, you know, if you're a sportscaster who can't describe a baseball game on the radio, you're not a sportscaster. I'm sorry, Gila, go ahead.
Yes. So first of all, one of our listeners at EricGunter2838 says, my strategy is listening to the game on an old AM radio a couple hours north of Toronto. Still some ads, but less. Thing I was thinking...
Canada gets it. Canada gets radio. They really do.
Yes. But here's the other question that I have is that... I've always found it fascinating that in sports journalism, there's never been any pretense of objectivity. And I've heard sports broadcasters say things like the bad guys talking about the other team. And I'm just wondering if none of the local sports radio channels were playing the World Series because none of our teams are in it.
Well, you know, I was thinking that too, but you know, two of them are ESPN. And that's a network. That's a national network. So, you know, I don't know. It just it seems like, you know, this is one of the biggest sporting events of the year and, you know, in this country. So it would have been, a good and I know there are FM stations, too, but I wasn't able to pick those up. But I don't think they had them either. It's just a shame.
Also, we got 56 right now, by the way, which is very exciting. And Tim in Connecticut shares that the current score is Toronto 2, Dodgers 0.
Oh, really? Going on right now. Okay.
Right now. Back-to-back home runs, apparently.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. It's exciting. It's exciting. It's, you know, it doesn't happen often. I wish the Mariners were in it. I'm sorry, Kyle. I rooted for the Mariners. They won the first two games in Toronto, and then they went home to Seattle, and they started losing. I don't know what happened. All the home teams were losing. And then they wound up losing the series. It was so sad. It really was. Because the Mariners are the only team that has never been to the World Series, the only existing team. And, boy, that would have been nice to, you know, chalk that one up.
Maybe next time.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to imagine what our our ad would be next to our time here on YouTube. like something snarky, right? Like...
Yeah, how do you?
What would we even choose if we were engineering our own ad?
I didn't click
this.
I don't think you get to choose the ad.
Oh,
though.
They put it in.
I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
So it'd be like yogurt or like some kind of weird cleaning product or something.
It'd be that damn Irish Spring deodorant. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Every goddamn channel I watch on YouTube, I see Irish Spring. I will never buy Irish Spring just because of that. Okay, advertising works differently on me.
I would just like to thank you, though, for turning off the mid-roll. Because remember that 1 week that was happening?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was the 1 week, and we turned it off right after that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But that was, I don't think that was a good experiment.
Didn't make any money. Nope. You won't make any money at this. So leave the content pure. You know, it's so horrible to be watching something and have it interrupted by constant ads, especially if it's something that's meant to be watched as one thing. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're watching a sunset on a lake, which you can do using YouTube with live features. But if you have that damn Irish Spring commercial coming in every few minutes, it ruins it. It really ruins it.
Yes, we do not change our content to suit the medium or the advertisers, because there are no advertisers on this,
mm-hmm.
and we like it that way.
That's true. Nobody would ever advertise with us, but that's beside the point. We wouldn't take them if they did. But so, they can make an offer if they want, you know, just so that we could laugh at it, to do that. Yeah.
What else is broken with technology?
Well, hopefully our phone line isn't. Can you check our phone line? Just make
I'll
sure
look it, at the phone it's line working. If you want.
It's,
I think
not,
it's
not turned on yet as far as receiving calls, but, you know, it's there. We
not
can test
totally,
it.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't see you testing it, and I don't hear anything, see? So it's a good thing we did that. There's nothing there. No. So it needs a little bit of work. We'll figure it out. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I was thinking about something earlier, which was one of the things we didn't get to talk about when we weren't on the air for various reasons. And it's happening so much, it's not really newsworthy anymore, but the AWS outage and everything it took down.
Mm-hmm. I heard there was one today. Was that true?
If there's one today, I don't know, but there's one last week.
Yeah, there was definitely a hiccup today as well,
and
not as bad as last week.
Some of the stuff that it took down last week,
mm-hmm.
Apparently the outage over the summer, people were finding out about it because their cat dishes were internet enabled, and the cat wasn't getting food, so the cat complained,
and
that's
on,
how they found out.
Hold on. Your cat dish is internet enabled?
Well, Emmanuel, sometimes people like to schedule the feeding for the cat, like you can remotely control your thermostat when you're out of the house. So, yeah, they were like, the cat's going to have breakfast at 7, and the cat is used to having breakfast at 7, okay. But, you know, can the I internet just... of things went down. Apparently, also, people's litter boxes went down, people's beds
litter
went down.
Litter boxes went down? What does that even mean? How does a litter box go down?
It's like a litter box robot situation. And
yeah, but the cat can still take a shit in the litter box, can it?
Yeah, but it's not going to clean it. I don't have a cat. I'm allergic to cats. Okay. I don't know shit about cat boxes.
Can I please speak on behalf of cats everywhere? They don't like being fed remotely. They like the interaction. Yeah, it's only humans, I know, but it's all they got, and they'll take it. But they don't like this remote crap. Uh-uh.
But it's not just the cat feeders. Yeah, you mentioned the beds, and there was a certain brand of $2,000-$3,000 internet enabled beds that used AWS servers.
I hate having to stop every time you mention something, but mm-hmm. internet enabled bed. What in the God's name? I could see the litter box. Okay, there's some functionality there. It's a bed. It's literally something mm-hmm. that you sleep on. What, are they going to disable that if you don't pay your fee?
It gets better, because the smart features, quote unquote, of this bed were like adjusting the temperature of the surface of the bed at certain points during the night to, you know, give you the best sleep, and to also control the elevation of the head and the foot of the bed. And when the system went down, people found their beds stuck in weird positions and unable to flatten, because there was no such thing as just locally controlling your own goddamn bed. People were waking up in the middle of the night sweating because the thing didn't stop heating.
Oh, wow.
And
people are getting cooked in their beds.
Yes. I thought you were talking about a cat bed. Okay.
Well, no, this is
humans,
a bed.
You know, go crazy, humans, but don't do that to a cat.
But here's my question. Why does sleep need to be software as a service?
That's an excellent question. And the business model of this company is apparently also subscription-based. It's an autopilot feature that's supposed to help automatically set devices to users' optimal sleeping conditions, and that'll set you back $200 a year. So the people who splashed out on these fancy beds found themselves, you know, unable to control them. And the company then during the outage realized, okay, it's probably a bad thing that you can't locally control your own bed, and apparently kept their engineers up all night until they figured out how to add this feature and get out ahead of future outages.
Apparently eight of the beds overheated and were destroyed mm-hmm. in the outage.
You see, if the people designing these things would only consult with the people using these things, they would get a lot of good ideas, like, yeah, control your own bed. That imagine that. No one's ever tried that before. All right, we're having some phone issues. Kyle, do you want to update us? With, you're taking it apart with a screwdriver. My God. And obviously he's making progress because I heard that horrible noise.
Okay. Well, while we're waiting on that, you know, related to this story, Samsung has a line of smart refrigerators that cost about $2,000, and they're family hub refrigerators. The whole front of the refrigerator door, one of the refrigerator doors, is a big Android tablet, and you can do useful things like, you know, see the time, see your calendar, see the weather, whatever. They have now changed their way of doing things and introduced ads to the people who paid $2,000 for a refrigerator.
This is what happens. This is what we're warning you about constantly. Yeah, I don't. Sucka. I'm not saying you deserve it, but for God's sake, people, what do you think is going to happen?
Suckers.
Yeah, I mean, was it written anywhere they're not going to do that? Of course they will. Of course they will.
And, you know, this has had all sorts of reactions. Someone writing for The Verge who has had one of these fridges for 5 years, you know, was never shown an ad, but now it's fair game. And there are ways to opt out of it. At least there are for now. But it just goes to show what's going to happen when you have a computer, whether it's an expensive thing or whether it's a cheap little device somewhere that is not under your control and requires the intervention of some outside agency to remain useful. What you're subjecting yourself to.
Yay!
And, yep.
Kyle got us a dial tone. Wow.
Talking of hardware that's under our control. Thank you, Kyle.
I had to change some batteries in our interface.
That reminds me of, like, you know, fishing for extenders in the 1980s and 1990s, where basically, you know, you would keep trying codes, and then if you got that dial tone, that was it. You know, you had a gateway. You could go places. It was success. Feel the same way.
It really is true, though. Like, these machines, these things that we're using, like, the manufacturers lose interest and they don't ever give support to third parties to that might be interested in creating a business model about maintaining them, and then you get kind of thrust in there as a consumer if you want to continue to use stuff and have to, like, find workarounds. And you really should be, and there becomes, you know, safety issues and stuff around people trying to make things work, and it should not be that consumers are put in that position.
I just thought of something.
Yeah.
You made me think of this. What if I contact the people of Nest who sold the technology to Google? They still have the info on how Nest works. They can open up the black box and make it so that people can restore their Nest thermometers. That's how you do it. Yeah. Why then? Why would Google object to that? They're not supporting it anymore. That's what they said. They're not supporting it, so why should they care?
Have you asked Gemini about this? Like,
I don't want Gemini involved.
You don't want to involve
that's
Gemini.
Google, too.
I know. Then it'll tell Google.
Are you Google?
No, I didn't say that.
Well, you're suggesting?
No.
You're suggesting a lot of Google.
I was just working on the phone line, and
all right, we have a phone line. We haven't yet activated it, though.
Generally advocating for consumers' abilities to use things the way they want.
Uh-huh. Alex has a point. He has one finger up. Go ahead, Alex.
Yes, I have one point here. I think we should open up the phone calls and start taking some phone calls because it's very late for me here. I have a flight to catch in the morning, so I'm going to make a deal here. I'll stay up for a little while longer, hang out with you guys. But if the first caller is Rebel, I don't think I think I'm going to bed.
So basically, okay. Rebel can send you to bed just by calling.
Or somebody else can keep me up.
Someone else, if they call faster, I'm talking slowly because it takes time for the words to get out to the internet. And again, as I said, the phone line is not yet activated, so I just want everyone to have a fair shake here. Now, you know, if Rebel is listening, it doesn't mean you can't call afterwards. Alex is requesting that you not be first.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't understand. I can't get into his head.
Because he usually takes up at least like 10 minutes of air, and I got to go to bed soon. So
yeah, it's just,
I'm gonna go to bed in like 10 minutes or so, because I have to get up pretty early for this flight. I want to take a little walk around St. Stephen's Green tomorrow as well.
Tell us something about Dublin, about Ireland. Have you taken it in as much as you think you can?
Yeah, as much as I can. I mean, it's been very, very busy for me here over the last couple of days, with basically meetings and all day, and then events and things in the evenings. But I did have opportunity to get out and explore. It's a pretty extraordinary city. I haven't been here since 1998, so it's changed quite a bit. I mean, anything around the Docklands and the River Liffey now is kind of It's insane how many like corporate headquarters there are. You know, I'm in a hotel that's like very close to a Salesforce headquarters building. It's like they've kind of perfected the art of the corporate headquarter tax dodge over here. But the rest of the city is pretty extraordinary. The other night, I was looking for something to do. Anytime I'm traveling, I try to at least take one night for myself and get away from colleagues and stuff like that and just kind of go exploring. Usually try to find a music venue. Mm-hmm. And there wound up being a ska show here in Dublin. Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, like, you know, kind of back like the 90s in New York. And it was actually a really good Scottish ska band that was playing called Esperanza.
Scottish ska. I don't think Scottish I've ever ska. Heard of Scottish ska. I'm practicing saying that. That's incredible. Yeah,
and they were great. And, you know, I went by myself. I wound up having an extraordinary time. Made, you know, lots of friends and whatnot, skanking it up, you know, listening to the band. And then all of a sudden I found myself in a mosh pit. And at my age, that's kind of weird.
I thought you were going to find yourself in a canal or something, because that does happen sometimes.
I found myself in a
happens
mosh
to Americans
pit.
Sometimes, yes.
And, I, you know, the mosh pit's an interesting place, right? It's like this place of controlled aggression and violence. Uh-huh. But yet at the same time, people look out for each other. If you transgress the rules, you get too violent, you know, you're going to get ejected.
Right.
But somebody who's probably around my age, they kind of got thrown into the stage area. And I went to grab him so that he wouldn't get hurt and have somebody like kind of smash into him while he was on the stage. And as I went to grab him with my left hand, somebody else smashed into my left hand and I sprained my thumb. So I
someone smashed into your left hand. You mean you punched somebody? That's what it sounds
no,
like.
No. I was trying to grab this guy and pull him back so he wouldn't get hurt. And as my hand was extended, somebody else slammed into my hand and just sprained my thumb. So I've been in considerable pain over the last couple of days. But I don't know. I have to say, I had a great time. It was like reliving my youth. I remember I broke my nose very badly when I was about 15.
Well, you're a violent person. All these mosh pit incidents of yours.
Well, it's cheaper than therapy.
I suppose so. I recommend Irish Tylenol. It's supposedly very good. yeah, Gila, exactly. Go ahead.
I did have a question for Alex.
Uh-oh.
Is it spelled Skattish?
No. No, it's not.
Well, I think that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
They would eat you alive over there, Gila.
Yep, absolutely. I know. All right, well, let's get the show on the road here.
All right. I'm trying to. You're gabbing it up with this mosh pit talk. 802-321-4225. The phone line is now active. Please give us a call, 802-321-4225. Don't be Rebel for the first call, and Alex will stay for a little bit. Be Rebel, and he will leave immediately. Boy, that's a weird thing to say.
let's see how this works out.
Okay.
Am I going to bed or not?
That's a good way to control somebody. Last week, we didn't get a single call because I think we haven't been on so long that people forgot how to do that. But now we are getting a call.
Here we go. All right, let's see.
And let's take this phone call. And good evening. You got to pick it up, Kyle. I can't pick it up. Okay. Picked up. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yes. Okay, Alex, you can go to sleep now.
Wow. Wow, Rebel. That's cold.
I didn't call because to Alex.
Why do you hate Alex so much? Why did you send him away? Well, Alex,
You know what? I got to get some sleep anyhow.
You have to go. Yeah, you have to go. I mean, obviously. Yeah. Why are you still talking to us?
Saved by the Rebel, I guess. Anyhow, I am going to bed. If I didn't hold true to my word, then nobody would ever believe me in the future. So I will say goodnight. It's lovely to see everybody and to hear everyone. And I'll see you all next week. I'm going to bed.
Have a pleasant flight.
All right. Happy Thursday, everyone. Yes. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, Rebel, I see you brought a hum with you. So what's on your mind?
All right, I know we're talking about different things like sports and mosh pits and all, but I'm going to talk about phone numbers. I mean, phone numbers. Did you know that the reason why people are running out of phone numbers is because scammers take phone numbers? In other words, when you get a phone call, it's a scammer. It's like, you know, when, you know, it'll be like one of those, you know, Medicare scams or like healthcare scams or whatever, you know, there's Indian people from India. But when you call the number, it's either somebody else's number or it doesn't exist. So they take they're taking non-existent numbers.
The number doesn't exist. They're not using a number. They're faking a number, but they're not using a number if it doesn't exist.
Not only that, but they're using actual numbers like Google Voice numbers, and they're getting all these phone numbers that they say, call us back at 1-800-whatever or call area code whatever, you know, to call them back for the scam. That's who's picking up all the numbers.
I did have an issue with using Google Voice where it took back or it made me do increasing numbers of things to verify that I was using the number. It didn't like that it was sitting idle or that I wasn't using it the way they liked. So there may be a good reason for that because of the types of thing you're describing. Especially for free services like that, where people might just get a whole bunch of them under their control, and then they're all of a sudden taking that block or the number of free accounts that they can offer really out of the market, and you end up having less of a service or less people able to use that free service you're trying to offer. Because you're totally right. There is like sort of a finite number of those combinations that are available.
It's ridiculous how many numbers are given out. I mean, you know, Google Voice is one culprit, but every phone company, every T-Mobile, AT&T, Verizon, they all give out multiple numbers to people and say, oh, it's the family plan. Everybody can have their own number. And most of the time, people don't even use these numbers. You know, there's just so many that are thrown out and wasted. That's, you know, I don't know if we're running out of numbers per se, because there are still a bunch of unused area codes, but it's, you know, most numbers aren't working. I agree with you there. Most numbers are just...
Right, but now what about the thing that where phone number, where you can't even trace, like phone numbers used to go to something, mm-hmm. You could get a call, you get the phone number, let's say you can call the phone number, but you can't find out where it is because it's like a Google Voice number or whatever, or find out what cell phone it goes to. You know what I mean? Get a call.
Yeah, it used to be you could tell where a phone number was located physically because there was a landline. You could look at the exchange. It used to be that a whole exchange was devoted to a particular phone company. It used to be that, even toll-free numbers, you could find out what company owned that toll-free number. But now with portability and basically being able to transport your number from one company to another and using area codes that follow you around wherever you happen to move to, none of it means anything anymore. Yeah, there are some exceptions. You will be able to still find people who have, you know, area codes and traditional exchanges, but it seems like the geographical usefulness of phone numbers is disappearing.
Remember, like the do not call list. I mean, it's like that doesn't even, it's not even relevant anymore because, you know, you if you get calls from like telemarketers or whatever, they're in other countries and they, you know, can still call you even though you say do not call or whatever. They use AI and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, if you trick the system, it's really hard to enforce it. That's true.
What about what else? There's also but what about the annoyance call bureau? Remember that when you used to be able to dial star 5-7?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you used to be able to get the annoyance call bureau on somebody who was harassing you, and they would track them down and tell them to stop.
Yeah, but that doesn't even work anymore because they're calling you from either out of the country or
That would be a good name for a ska band.
Annoyance call bureau. That is a good name for a ska band.
Yeah.
Wow. Absolutely. Absolutely. Write that one down.
Somebody should.
Anything else, Rebel?
These are good points.
What else?
You should write this down that you just have to consult the list.
What else? You know about the AS400 by IBM?
What about it?
I don't know. I just remember. I was just like researching. Oops! I just took a screen capture of. Cancel that. It was a terminal. I mean, it was like a mini mainframe kind of a thing, but like without like the big room and the raised floor and all that.
Uh-huh.
Because I miss computer terminals and things like that.
Yeah, you could have it like in one place and then have a whole bunch of them different parts of your office environment.
Rebel should work in a computer museum, I think.
Yeah.
I think that would be great.
Yeah, but I don't know much about, I know about computers. It's, or a phone museum or something.
Don't worry.
Like
there'll be people who come in every day and tell you everything they know about it. So, so you won't have to worry about that.
Well, I mean, I went to the phone museum in Seattle. They should.
That's where there used to be a great computer museum, the one that they destroyed, right?
Yeah, the Living Computer Museum.
Living Computer Museum, the most awesome place ever.
But the...
Isn't there one in San Francisco in the Bay Area somewhere?
Is there?
There is, I believe.
There's one in Boston.
There's one in Boston? Why don't we get on the Damisella and go there?
Maybe one day. Yeah, because I like to see, like, old, not old things, right? I'm talking about things from, like, the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, part of getting them in those places and getting them set up is having the know-how and the kind of interest, the enthusiasm, because there's heavy lifting and the combination of that kind of old knowledge and the energy to, like, build stuff up and install it. You got to get different groups together, people that are familiar and people that are willing to set it up. And then you have to think about the fundamentals of, like, weights and space requirements, but also power. Like, just running something that isn't emulated can be costly because of the ways those pieces of equipment were connected and powered traditionally. Would have had a business model around them that could afford that. And if your museum isn't able to cover that, it can be hard. It can be really hard to have original systems like that that are set up, working, and original in that sense. But something that you're emulating maybe uses a lower power sort of single board or other kind of like hobbyist computer kits or microcontrollers, like those things could potentially give you similar functionality, but at much lower sort of power requirement. And then your terminals themselves could maybe be like original or variations on original terminals.
Yeah,
so like it's a worthy project. You could totally do it, but there are real considerations, and that's why having museums that are well funded and able to do a lot of that planning so that people can have the experience that you're so interested in, which is that tactile sort of playing around with things. But yeah, there's lots of ways you could do it.
Yeah, let me ask you this. I have my desktop computer here that runs Linux, and I have my laptop that has Windows 11, and what I like to do is the files that I have on my desktop, like pictures, videos, documents, things like that, I also have the same thing on my laptop. It's kind of like a backup in case one goes down. And what I do is I now use this thing called Local Send, and it's an app, application or utility that you use Wi-Fi. I take my laptop, and if I wanted to send like a 1 meg file or 1 gig file or whatever, I just turn on the local send on both computers, and it just sends it over Wi-Fi. But is that secure, or is that like, you know what I mean? I could do it on Bluetooth, but for some reason it's slow on Bluetooth.
Well, it definitely is a better channel, or better performance wise than Bluetooth. All Bluetooth is pretty capable, but yeah, it may be running into some kind of limitation where Wi-Fi is just better able to move data around like that. But I'm not familiar with that exact feature.
It's local. I was just wondering, sending it over Wi-Fi, what if somebody else said it went on that Wi-Fi network and saw a thing that's a computer and laptop.
I mean, there could be other devices on your network that are able to pick up traces of things that aren't well designed. So that's a very rightful concern that you have. So totally, it really is dependent on how many other kinds of things are on that same subnet. And there's things that you can do to design your network to maybe isolate stuff that you don't want to be peered upon. But if it's well designed, it can kind of play nice with all that other stuff. And assuming your network is somewhat contained and under control, yeah, I mean, it's a fairly good scheme to use that, I'm sure. But I don't know the details of that.
Multicast address and port 53317, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Rebel, we're going to have to leave it there. But thank you. Thank you for your call. And keep searching for more knowledge. That was Rebel. And yeah, I'm working on the hum, trying to get rid of the hum, but I think it's in the board somewhere. I really do, because when I touch it, it goes away. That's the dial tone. 802-321-4225 is our phone number for any other people that are out there. We'd like to hear from you as well. People in Signal Land, you still there?
Yes. We're here. We're here. I'm attempting to read the most recent comment on the chat, and I think someone leaned on their keyboard. I don't understand what you're saying.
That happens sometimes.
That was 2N plus D. PRI was 1.5 MB 24V plus 1D.
Well, now we know, don't we?
Does anyone know what I just said?
I think you said my password.
I wasn't really paying attention to every digit in that, but maybe it is some sort of calculation or some of the speeds we were talking about. He was talking about Bluetooth or Wi-Fi at one point, but I don't know if people are even paying attention to the specifics of what he was asking.
Fair. We did get a comment from at Optical Phoenix, who said, just saw a video about this. This was 5 minutes ago while Rebel was talking. By a guy called Enzo D'Amato, a DEF CON talk called Journey to the Center of the PSTN. He goes over how scammers work and how to set up a phone company. Rebel should call him.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's just it. A lot of this is fairly easy. I mean, there are a lot of tools and ways to set these kinds of businesses, these kinds of operations up. So it's not surprising that, easy to obtain blocks of phone numbers are being used like this.
And you know that, how long ago was it now that our phone number got spoofed?
Oh, that's some years now.
And our phone was ringing off the hook for a few days because people were seeing us on their caller ID, calling us back. So we had to re-record the outgoing voicemail to say, hi, it's Gila and Rob. And if you don't know who we are, we didn't call you and we're really sorry.
Did that work, or did people still try to reach you?
So that was while the phone was ringing while we weren't here during the day, and people stopped leaving angry voicemails, which was nice.
Well, the important thing is you learned your lesson.
Not certainly to get our phone number spoofed. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I aim for that every day, uh-huh. Really.
People are going to blame you no matter what, so just might as well.
Ain't that the truth?
All right, let's take this phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Overtime. Go ahead. Go ahead, you're on.
Okay, am I on now?
You're on right now.
Okay, so the hum is back, so you know.
Yes, we
know. Anyway, I've been running a VoIP business for, this is the guy in Toronto who calls once in a while.
Oh, cool.
So, I've been running a VoIP business for customers, since 2004.
Uh-huh.
So what the spoofing is you go, you can go in and you can put any phone number in the system you want to send out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Germany has addressed it the following way. They have a national database, and before your call can go out, it must verify with the database that you, in fact, own this number. The U.S. is trying to do something now called, I think it's called Stir Shake, and it's a disaster.
Really?
And I have two U.S. providers, one in Pennsylvania, one, I think the other one's in Colorado, and they continue to send me emails that if I don't register with, and they want all your information, your personal information, your business information, your tax ID number, your everything. And only once you provide that will they consider sending your calls out because it's gotten that bad.
Wow.
So I can tell you that that's how it works. That's how it is. The other reason I was calling a few weeks ago, you guys were having a conversation, you guys and gal, sorry, didn't mean to leave you out, about all the telecom stuff that happened in Manhattan back in the 90s. And I was there. I worked there. I lived through it. I know the whole thing. I don't know if you probably don't want me to talk about this tonight, but I'm happy to come on sometime if you want to know how it all evolved and how it got to where it is today.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Bernie Ebbers mean anything to anybody?
Doesn't ring a bell.
MCI WorldCom.
That rings a bell. Literally.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so the reason I'm bringing it up is I did battle with MCI WorldCom. They were a provider to the company I was working for, and he ultimately went to prison. I've had I've been quoted and even had my picture on the front page of the Wall Street Journal about this. And he ended up going to prison, and I think I keep track of him, and about 3 years ago he died there.
Oh, dear.
So it was the largest bankruptcy, and it was bigger than Enron. And most people, if you weren't in the telecom business, you didn't know about it. But I think I think something like 150,000 people lost their jobs.
Wow.
And he would meet with his CFO every Friday for lunch, for quote lunch, and mostly it was a cocaine snorting session where he told the CFO what the numbers had to look like. The CFO ultimately went to prison for about 3 years himself. But I dealt with ISDN. I put ISDN in 92 when it still had to be done, something called a special assembly.
Interesting.
So, and we ran a call center. We ran two locations, dealt with Verizon for 12 years. And if you're interested, someday I can tell you some details about
it. Well, I'll tell you, you know, what you're telling us now is fascinating. And I think, you know, are you in the New York area?
Nope. I live in Toronto. I run everything out of here now.
Okay, well,
I got up one morning and realized that instead of Al Gore being the president, it was George Bush, and I thought to myself, I now know what it might feel like to live in a religious state, and packed myself up and came here in 2005, and I run a technology company and my VoIP business from here.
Wow, okay. Well, I think you made a good choice. I think you should give a Hope talk, because what you're talking about now is so interesting to the people that attend Hope that you would pack the room with and have all kinds of questions and probably meet a bunch of people too.
Oh, well, I'd have to do it virtually because I don't dare cross the border. I don't know what's real. I mean, I hope what we're seeing here is actually what's actually true, but what we're seeing from here is absolutely terrifying.
Mm-hmm. No, it's terrifying to us, too, but strength in numbers, you know. But, you know, there's other ways. you can present material, for sure.
Yeah. So, anyway, I lived through it, had lots of dealings with Verizon. Do you know that there's in Queens, 190th and Utopia Parkway was where our facility was there. And there is out there a virtual central office under the street.
Really? That's not
yep.
That's not far from St. John's, I don't think.
No, I think it's right. I think it's right near you. We're the Kmart Plaza. I don't know if Kmart's still there or not. It's the Kmart Plaza.
Yeah, Kmart's.
And we had
business.
A call center up on this. Well, the problem we had in the area, big problem was we'd run out of facilities. We ran out of circuits.
Uh-huh.
And back then, it was 1.5 circuits doing 23B plus 1D. And we'd call up Verizon. We'd say, okay, we need to add another T1. And they'd come out, and construction would come back to us and say, out of facilities. You're looking at 9 months to construct enough facilities to do that.
That sounds like Verizon, yes.
It was a fun challenge. I used to have workarounds with the supervisor for T1 maintenance for all of the five boroughs. And when we had a ticket problem, everybody got their five 2 hours to test.
Uh-huh.
Carrier got 2 hours. Somebody else got 2 hours. And if they found a fail, they'd dispatch. But if they did it after 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they were into the next day. And so I made an arrangement with the supervisor that if I called in the ticket number to him,
mm-hmm.
he would go ahead and dispatch. And he said, yeah, but we don't want to dispatch because if we find out it's your equipment, you'll dispute the charges. And I gave my word that I wouldn't dispute the charges. So
uh-huh.
we ran like that for about 6 years.
Wow.
And during 9/11, everything collapsed. And I was running around all over the place. It was I won't tell the name, but it was an airline. I was running all over the place setting up dial-up stuff from cargo and passenger offices so we could still function while they put, I think it was a 3 World Trade Center. They had all the batteries in the basement that got flooded.
Okay.
Anyway, so any of that history I know, I was there for it. I used to go to Port Authority meetings to see what they were planning. So... Uh-huh.
Wow.
If any of that's useful to anybody.
Oh, absolutely. No, this is really fascinating stuff. In fact, I think you've got a book here, to be honest. I think you really could write these stories out, and it'll be fascinating to many, many people.
What is your opinion about where we've ended up these days? I mean, what do you make of it all in general
could you summarize that
in your opinion?
I'm at the ripe old age of 71, so I've seen a lot of stuff. I remember when they broke up the Bell system. and they created the BOCs, the Bell Operating Companies. And this is all in the name of competition and better pricing and all that.
That's right.
And what I think, where we've come is we've come full circle back around, and it's like all the telecom companies are what we know of telecom companies. There's like, we're down to about three or four of them again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, General Telephone, not that they were ever any good, they're out of business. All the independents are out of business.
Right.
Bell or somebody ate them, Verizon ate them up. And it's the same, and long distance turned into a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, there is, you know, when you've got all the workarounds like WhatsApp and, you know, Google Voice and all this stuff where you don't have to pay anything, what business is there for the telecom companies to sell long distance service? There isn't. It's gone.
Right.
So where we've come to, and because of mismanagement, excuse me, I am an American, I'm allowed to say this, because of the mismanagement of the CEO of Nortel that they stole from Motorola, Nortel went bankrupt. And so we're left with Cisco. And I find that the people at Cisco are arrogant. I find them, they're difficult to work with. And if you're not ready to spend $75,000 with them, you're not even going to get a salesperson to come out and talk to you. You're going to have to deal with somebody at a call center, you know, to arrange to do something that's going to cost your organization $50,000 to $60,000. So there's nobody, you know, there's independents like me who tinker around. I'm not a Linux guy, but I got two Linux programmers that back me up on this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And we run, and I was getting a kick out of the Amazon thing because when I set this business up several years ago, several people said, oh, you have to use Amazon Web Service, Amazon Web Service. But we sourced a little company called, what's it called? It's up in Canada. It's a data hosting company.
Sure.
I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, they have a big data center. They're a French company.
Okay.
And they have a big data center. I'm seeing this because you might jog your memory of who they are. They have a big data center up in Quebec, and it's on the St. Lawrence Seaway. It's an abandoned aluminum factory. And I've never been there, but I've been told that there's about 800,000 servers there. They build their own servers on site. So you rent them. You can rent all the way from a small virtual to do some small things all the way up to, you know, two or three racks if you want. And everything's available in inventory. And the minute you place your order, your stuff is working within about 3 minutes.
That's the way to do it, yeah. Just basically.
Well, and we've been using them for going on 15 years, and we've never had a we've had two downtimes. Somebody hit a pole and brought a fiber optic cable down, and I don't know what the other one was. But in 15 years for two downtimes, that's pretty good. And all these, and Amazon is charging, what I hear, that they're charging a fortune.
Yes.
And this is what you get.
Is the company called Cologix?
No, it's not Cologix. I'm looking through my
Equinix
stuff, and I'm... No.
Q-Scale?
It's,
I'm looking up a list.
OVH. OVH.
OVH. Okay, we got there. Cool.
So OVH their story is this guy in Poland about 20 years ago wanted to start a hosting business, knew nothing about computers or IT. Did a message with somebody over IRC in New York City who said, well, if you bring a computer over here, I'll set it all up so you can do hosting on it. Flew over, set it up, went back to France, and his first hosting facility was a shed in his backyard.
Nice.
And if you look OVH up, I mean, they are now massive, but most people do not know they exist.
Uh-huh.
And they're just awesome. Their stuff just works. And because they own the hardware, there's no liability to pay for your own server. And if you have a problem, it's their responsibility to fix it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of options out there that people, they just get into this mindset that you have to go with what everybody else is using, and then, look what happens. It goes down, and
exactly.
you're with the crowd. While people that design and kind of build their own stuff and avail themselves of some of these little-known vendors, you're sitting pretty, doing business as usual in these instances.
I wasn't laughing last Monday or Tuesday, but on a, you know about a distribution list called outages?
Uh-huh.
There's an email. It's just an email distribution list. I get notifications of all the outages of networks around the world.
Of course.
And I was watching this stuff, and all the people posting on it, oh, this is down, that. And big, major stuff was down.
Right.
I mean, not just somebody's kitty box cleaner. It was big stuff that just didn't work.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, that's where that was. But OVH is really good. Nobody knows about, but they've got a lot of customers. I don't generally like the French for technology, but in this case, I'll make an exception. They do a really nice job.
Well, that's good to hear. It's good to hear something positive.
We pay about $45 a month for our own dedicated metal server.
Wow. Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. So I thought that was good. Anyway, you might want to look them up, and I'll think about your Hope Talk, and who knows, maybe I'll submit something someday.
Yeah, I mean, we'd love to hear more about this. Please send us an email, oth@2600.com, so that at least we can stay in touch, because you have a lot of really good stories that are of interest to our community. I believe Rob wants to say something to you. You might not be able to hear him. Let's try speak as loud as you can, Rob.
Okay, sure.
Hello, caller. Can you hear me?
Yep, I hear you.
Okay.
My name is
Fantastic.
Jeff, by the way.
Your name is Jeff?
I'm Jeffic 1300 on the chat.
Okay, cool.
Oh, excellent. Good to speak with you, Jeff. I wanted to thank you for the push toward Bernard Ebers. You can look him up on Wikipedia. I've been reading his article with great fascination as you've been speaking with us. And yeah, it's worth a read. Bernard Ebers, E-B-B-E-R-S. I do want to correct you. He didn't die in prison. About a month before his death, he was in terrible health, and they granted him compassionate release. He died a month after that. But after serving, I think, 13 years of his 25-year sentence.
Well, the MCI and WorldCom had a major culture clash. MCI had their own network. It stands for Microwave Communication, and mm-hmm. was developed by Bill McGowan in the 80s. They're the ones that got it legal to be transmit voice communication over microwave. Prior to that, it was illegal.
Between Cleveland and Chicago.
And they did that.
It was between Cleveland and Chicago.
Pardon?
Originally. It was between Cleveland and Chicago.
Right? I don't remember. But they did it, and they used to jokingly refer to it. MCI was the law firm with the antenna on the roof. And so a lot of companies bought MCI. IBM owned them for a while, but they had kind of the IBM culture, you know, the button-down Oxford shirts with the white, you know, white shirts and, you know, the IBM suit look. And the WorldCom people didn't own a network. I mean, all they were was a big sales agency. But they had enough money, and they came in and they bought MCI. And we had services that were cross-provisioned. It was an absolute nightmare. We had issues where we'd have a trouble report, and I'd call up WorldCom, and they call up MCI because they were actually the provider of the service, and they said, "Up, you're not the customer of record. We don't have to talk to you."
Wow.
And they were right. Oh, and I know all about how cell service is deregulated, and now internet service is also. I'm guessing you all know what an SLA is. Service level agreement.
Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you read the service level agreement for internet service and cell phone, it reads something like this: best effort available at the time.
Okay.
That's it.
Wow.
That's it. And there's no recourse, there's no oversight, and if your service goes down, there's no promise of time to service restoration, nothing. And Verizon had been working on this for years. And that's why they're pushing cell service when the storms hit out on Fire Island years ago and all the cables got destroyed. People came in and said, "Yeah, but what about our businesses and what about our faxes and our credit card readers?" "Oh, we'll give you a cell phone." And back then, the technology wasn't good enough to send that kind of stuff over a cell phone.
Right.
And they finally forced the New York Public Utilities Commission to reinstall the cables. But that didn't last long because eventually they made it so cheaper and landlines so expensive. And now I don't know what they've done there, but here there are no more copper wires. They've decommissioned all of it. It's all fiber, mm-hmm. and they're bringing it into people's homes. And sometimes, for the most part, it works, but both the major companies here do a horrible job of it.
Right.
And we have nowhere else to go. And we have the highest cell and internet prices in the world.
Oh, dear. That's
my cell phone bill for just a simple cell is about $90 a month.
Okay. Wow. I know people pay more than that, but
anyway,
it's still a lot.
Anyway, So I know a lot of that history, and a friend of mine also worked with us at a cargo company, and between the two of us, we've got telecom stories that, like, will curl your toenails up.
Well, we want to hear them all. We really do. And we'll figure this out.
Not tonight.
Not tonight, but we'll get you on the air. We'll get you, you could do an article for the magazine, presentation at Hope. There's all kinds of avenues to share your experiences with.
I'm trying to think who the guy that's presented at Hope and other places about telecom and just knows it backwards and forward. I can see him. He's based out of San Francisco and absolutely knows all of this stuff.
Oh, boy. There's so
and
many.
There are a lot. Okay. Well, anyway, so thanks for taking my call, and I'll send you an email, and we'll draft some stuff out and see if there's anything to do.
Great. Well, thanks for listening, and thanks for calling. Take care.
And thanks for everybody having for the show and tolerating me.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Good night.
What a great call. That was awesome.
Very cool.
It's amazing. I like getting new calls that are fascinating and interesting. Since we've only had two calls tonight, I'm going to leave it open for one more call. If it's a quick call and it comes in quickly. All right. And no hard feelings if neither one of those things happen. Well, no, there will be hard feelings if you don't get off the phone. But here, the phone call has already come in. So we're going to take that call and go ahead. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hold on 1 second.
It's another regular caller here. We had two regular callers and one,
I don't have the ID
one,
anymore.
One new caller. Yes, you're in the city that's occupied right now.
Oh, right. Well, I'm not here to talk about Washington today. I mean that last caller, that's an amazing. It seems like he's really got, of course, he's got a lot of stories.
It's amazing the people who are out there that you don't know are out there that know all this stuff. So it's fascinating to me.
Yeah. I think he should go on Darknet Diaries. Maybe Jack Reesider would want to talk to him about that, especially about various telecom-related crimes.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's all kinds of places where this will be listened to with rapt attention.
I just wanted to bring up another story that I actually emailed you right before the show went, and I didn't see you get to it, but it's a scientific paper that came out in mid-October describing unencrypted information being sent over various satellite links.
That's still going on?
Mm-hmm. It goes, scientists at the University of California, San Diego, and the University of Maryland say they were able to pick up large amounts of sensitive traffic largely just by pointing a commercial off-the-shelf satellite dish at the sky from a roof. In its paper, the team describes how they performed a broad scan of IP traffic on 39 geosynchronous satellites across 25 distinct longitudes and found that half of the signals they picked up contained clear text IP traffic.
Wow.
This included unencrypted cellular backhaul data sent from the core networks of several U.S. operators destined for cell towers in remote areas. Also found was unprotected internet traffic heading for in-flight Wi-Fi users aboard airlines and unencrypted call audio from multiple VoIP providers.
So oh, my.
If you're searching a web on your airplane, that's where it goes through.
Okay, well, this is fascinating to me. I'd like to know more about it. I'd like to see some of the data because it's out there. It's unencrypted. It's obviously meant for
our
eyes.
The story's from the Register, and if these guys were able to do it, you can do it too. Now, to my understanding, most of this work was actually performed last year, and only this month they're able to present their paper. Some of the satellite operators have fixed this issue and encrypted their data. Others aren't, but I think for the moment, you really just want to get in touch with somebody who knows satellites and see what you can scoop up there.
Yeah, definitely. Rob, did you have something?
I mean, it's all kind, and it's related to telecom, as the last caller was. I mean, this concerns the wireless companies, AT&T and T-Mobile. You know, these people with the satellite dish were able to pick up calls, texts from both of these companies.
There's no excuse for that in this day and age. Rob is going to say, listen carefully so you can hear Rob. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, this this does remind me of the old days of analog cell phones that you could just listen to with a regular radio scanner, and before that, analog cordless phones, where I remember getting my first cordless phone in the 80s and walking around my neighborhood with the handset and picking up calls from other people who were, you know, using their cordless phones on the same
situation.
Yeah, absolutely, just on a grander scale.
It's data too, though, not just voice, right?
It's data. I mean, the researchers found most of the protocols were known, you know, IP and stuff, but there were a couple of other unidentified protocols, which for now are only secure through their obscurity.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that. I'm sure it's going to be all over the news. It just happened, you said?
Yeah, the paper just dropped in the middle of this month. I know you're off, so that's probably why you didn't get to it or just didn't find it. But the story's on the Register. I believe it came out October 15th.
Okay.
And most of the work done in this paper, this is a brand new paper. Most of the work is from last year. They did the white hat things and just reported these issues to the companies. And, you know, some of them fixed it, some of them haven't.
Can't understand that, but now that they haven't fixed it, it needs to be.
You can understand that
shared.
They want to do the bare minimum.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, if they know it's already out there, they need to do more than the bare minimum because it's not going to look good.
And I think that's what the publication of this paper hopes to provide.
Yeah.
By the way, Maryland, that's in the D.C. metropolitan area. I've been to the University of Maryland and been in some of their buildings.
Yeah, it's a good place.
Right.
All right, well, thanks for your call, and good hearing from you.
All right. Hey, Rob, when are we going to have, what's his name, Bradley Carter on the show?
Rob is actually away from the...
That was a mic drop, I think, but...
That was a mic drop, wow. And unfortunately, Rob has stepped away from the microphone for a moment, so he can't answer that, but I will pass along the question. And actually, as long as I'm speaking, Tim in Connecticut says, I knew a guy that pulled unencrypted TV off towers with pie plates and PVC tubes. I'm sure they fixed that now.
What is going on in that apartment? Wow. The door sounds like it's being tortured.
I mean, at least the door opens now.
It's got a lot of personality.
It does have a lot of personality. Over the summer, the doorknob fell off.
Oh, I think I heard this story.
Mm-hmm. I think we may have told this on the air.
I can't remember if we told it on the air at another time we were talking, but...
The lost weekend.
Right? It was 8 o'clock in the morning, you were getting ready to leave, and mm-hmm. you said, and the doorknob had come off.
Yes, and because it was summer and the heat had expanded the door tightly into the door frame, it's a metal door, and so there was no way to get out. I had to call the building superintendent.
Now it's autumn, you were able to get out, finally. Is that what happened?
Yeah, it was a long, hot summer. Mm-hmm. But
wow.
While you were away,
yes.
Our previous caller asked when Brad Carter is going to be a guest on the show. Hung up the phone.
I will say Brad Carter has several shows of his own that are worth checking out if you look for phone loser stuff. yeah.
Emmanuel, we have a listener who's in the chat who has asked for the phone number several times, and I think just announced they want to call. So do we want to take one more?
It's already disconnected. It's not
going to
work.
Okay, we're done.
We only have that window for a brief period, and then it has to go to somebody else.
It's sort of like a satellite.
Yeah, you can give them the phone number for next time, assuming it's the same number next time, 802-321-4225. But if you listen, you should hear us say it many times. But you can tell them in the chat, too, if they want it in front of them.
Absolutely. So as I keep reminding folks in the chat, especially if they're newer to our program, we are very cautious about not giving out the number while someone's on the phone
because we only have one line
and we don't want our listeners to get stuck in voicemail hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's what happens. Some people are still there. Well, anyway, thanks everybody for listening, and please write to us, oth@2600.com, if you have anything you want to share. We'd like to hear from you. We'll be back again next week we probably are due for a call-in show on BAI, but, you know, it's been so chaotic, we're going to continue with this for now. So regular show, 7 p.m. on BAI, and overtime, 8 p.m. here on YouTube. And don't forget, it's going to be an hour earlier next week. Except you don't have to do anything because everything does it automatically. Daylight savings time is over, or will be over. Already is in Ireland, where Alex is.
Right, but happy Halloween, everyone.
That's right.
Sure is.
Maybe we'll come back with like 10,000 lines. You know, I mean, it's primitive, but it works. And those were really great calls. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes. Have a good night.